Have you not seen this?
How have you not seen this? As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today I'm joined by my special guest host, Brad Keefe.
Hi, I'm Brad Keefe.
And our guest, Lauren Benkaz.
Hello, I'm Lauren, and I live here.
And we just watched Kill Bill Volume 1, Quentin Tarantino's fourth film, written and directed by a great movie, great first part of a revenge epic, heavily influenced by spaghetti westerns, samurai, martial arts films, very, very violent.
Yeah.
Movie, very fun movie.
Fun violence.
Yeah.
My
fun violence,
kind.
which is why you go to a Tarantino movie to begin with. Brad, would you like to say a couple of things about the movie at all?
I have like really strong memories of it. From the year of release. I've been a Tarantino junkie since watching Reservoir Dogs and my buddy's floor. On VHS. That's how old I am.
You're old.
That's how I saw Pulp Fiction.
And Kill Bill was at a point where, any new Tarantino movie was an event for me. And this one was the first after a few years' wait, but it was split into two parts, so it was also kind of a bit of a tease.
Yeah.
But you also knew you didn't have that long to wait for another Tarantino movie.
Yeah, which was nice. This is actually the first one that I saw in the theaters of his... So that holds a place for me because of that. So, obviously a pretty important, pretty wonderful film. Lauren, how have you not seen this?
I've seen the second to last scene before.
Okay.
And I've been in the room when people have watched it, but I wasn't really, that much of a Tarantino enthusiast until a couple years ago.
Do you watch a lot of movies, you start with the second to last scene... And just kind of work your way around?
No, I just, I usually watch a different, style of movies. Dustin's walked in on me watching a bunch of sad documentaries.
Yep.
Or Tank Girl's a favorite. Weird movies, but Tarantino, I think, I didn't see Pulp Fiction until, two or three years ago. And I think that was around the same time that I saw Reservoir Dogs. And so I've come to appreciate it, but it's not something I necessarily seek out.
Gotcha. It's funny, you made the comment that you've only seen the second to last scene. So you just watched this movie pretty much the way Guy Pearce's character in Memento experiences his life. Which is a very ineffective way to watch movies, I think.
It's interesting that you'd say that. I haven't actually seen Memento.
Oh, Memento is... it's another very, very
good
movie.
But I've heard about it.
Oh, yeah.
Just pretend you understand the reference.
I mean, yeah. I do get the reference because, I know the plot, but I haven't actually...
Oh, that's all right. I think 80% of the people who listen to this watch movies, so they'll appreciate my killer Memento joke.
I appreciate you as a beautiful soul.
Oh, you stop it. You stop it right there. So now we have got through part one. What did you think?
I think the same feeling that I have on the other Tarantino movies that I've seen. I super appreciate it, and, I think it's really awesome, but I still don't think I would, seek it out. But it was, I definitely enjoyed it, and I appreciated it for what it was.
Oh, man. If we can't sell you on Tarantino with Kill Bill, right?
Yeah.
So wait, which ones you seen?
I've seen Reservoir Dogs. You said he did that one?
Yeah, that's his first.
Then I saw Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
What other...
Jackie Brown was after that, then the Kill Bills, then Death Proof, then Bastards and Django.
I think I've seen Inglourious Bastards. I don't remember.
Oh, man.
I mean, I've seen at least parts of it, and I probably fell asleep. While it is amazing, it's just not...
It's just not your cup of tea.
Yeah.
It's just not...
I mean, what?
It's just not hoarders or documentaries about people living in tiny houses.
Dustin also usually catches me on Sundays just laying in my chair in the dark with my cat watching, a marathon of Hoarders.
Yeah.
So...
Tarantino.
It's no Hoarders.
Tarantino, not good enough, but TLC's original programming, knocking it out of the park.
Well, if you, I think you have to watch, like, if you want to write, like, the Narcoleptic's Guide to Quentin Tarantino films.
Yeah.
They do lend themselves to,
yeah.
I just saw this scene. I mean, you know.
Yeah, they have, like, incredibly
iconic
scenes.
The film we just watched has a lot of segmented, kind of
yeah.
standalone.
Yeah, like, they're really powerful movies, and I really appreciated this one, how it was all, like, powerful female characters.
Yeah, very much so.
Getting revenge on each other, and it
yeah.
wasn't a whole lot of, like, men in the way.
Well, Jackie Brown's that way, too. Pam Grier is the lead. It's very...
Nice.
Basically all about her not taking shit from nobody.
Maybe I'll have to check it out.
It's good. It's very good. So, wait, so when you say the second to last scene, do you mean the entire House of Blue Leaves sequence? Or just the sword fight with her and Orenichi?
Just the sword fight.
Okay.
Because I think I saw it when I came home, and the person that I was dating was, like, there, and he had been watching the movie, and I think I had, like, a 12-hour shift, and then I was just like, I'll lay here for a minute, and I probably fell asleep.
Okay. I would say, I feel like if you'd come in, like, right at the start of the House of Blue Leaves scene, you would have been like, oh, I gotta watch this
Yeah,
now.
Because, like, I really liked that scene, and then I also liked how they were setting up Lucy Liu's character. I like how they went to,
with,
like,
the anime?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really great change. That was a shock scene in the theater, too, because I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
And it kind of came out of left field, but yeah, it meshes very well, and it makes sense with Tarantino's style.
Yeah, and I really do, like, the more Tarantino movies I see, I appreciate the style that he does more. You seem very upset, Brad.
I'm not very upset. It's like you're well within your... I kind of feel Tarantino's really love it or hate it. And
yeah, oh yeah, very much.
So your ambivalence is kind of interesting to me, because it's an unusual response to... Oh, it's okay. I saw another.
Well, I mean, no, like, I really enjoyed it while I was experiencing it. It's just not what I would usually watch. Like, I'll give you an example. I was on vacation from work this week, so on Monday, I watched a documentary about coma victims.
this one had a coma victim in it.
Right, and then
you should have loved this movie.
Yeah, while I was watching the scene where she's coming out of a coma, I was like, that is not how it works. There's vegetative state, and then there's minimally conscious, and then it just takes, like, at least 6 months to a year of rehab.
Well,
this movie should be a lot longer to explain her coming out of a coma.
They did pitch, you know, chapter 2,
yeah.
Yeah.
Kill Bill the vegetative state.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to be in
just test well with audiences.
No, you gotta be in a minimally conscious state to have any chance of recovery. But after I watched the coma documentary, then I went on to one called Thin, and it was about women at a camp where they were being rehabilitated from eating disorders. And then after that, I followed it up with a documentary about the Pamela Smart murder trial. So, I mean, I feel like all of those really prepped me for watching
yeah.
Kill Bill.
In Tarantino's defense, that coma documentary probably hadn't been made when he wrote this film.
That's true. It was made around the time of Terry Schiavo, but...
Yeah, so that would have posted.
So, I mean, how was he supposed to know that she wasn't supposed to leap out of coma? But I think that, but speaking about the coma scene, that actually I think was one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah.
Like, I was very upset because, like, again, violence towards women.
Mm-hmm.
For listeners that have not seen Kill Bill.
We've established that if they haven't watched the movie, they probably shouldn't be listening to the podcast
okay.
now, so say what you
want. Okay, well, the scene they have... is it what was the guy's name? The nurse's name?
Buck. And he
yeah,
came here
and
to fuck.
He came to fuck. So Buck leads in the guy that's gonna have
Jonathan Loughran from the Adam Sandler movies.
I thought I recognized
yeah.
him.
Which is such a weird person to put in a non-Adam Sandler movie ever.
Don't watch a lot of Tarantino. Probably have seen all Adam Sandler
oh,
movies.
Good.
I've seen both Grown Ups films.
yeah, I think I have.
God damn it.
actually, no. I've seen number one, but not number two.
That's
but
more than I've seen.
You should
through.
Start with the second to last scene of Grown Ups 2.
I should.
By Rob Schneider playing a racist caricature again, I'm sure.
Probably. But, so, Buck who's there to fuck, brings in the guy that's gonna have sex with these poor women, or men, I don't know his sexual preference, they didn't give a lot of backstory to his character, but for that day he's gonna fuck Uma Thurman, and I was very upset about that scene until Uma just springs out of a coma and bites his face.
Yep.
And that made me so happy.
Oh yeah, that's a fun scene. It's fun just watching her, like, struggle to be badass in that scene because her body's completely atrophied on her.
Yeah. I like how she still has all the upper body strength, but she can't move her toes.
Well, I mean, did your coma documentary address revenge-fueled coma recovery times?
No, there was no...
Probably kill a lot more people with your hands and your feet.
That's true. And she's probably killing them in her sleep the whole time. They just, in the coma documentary, it was just people were there to love them. And maybe since she didn't have that.
Well, and also, like, because... Well, when she's in the coma, too, like, she's constantly hooked up to an IV of something.
Yeah.
Which would imply that something is being circulated, so, like, maybe that explains why the upper body is, like, somewhat okay, whereas, like, the legs are just not doing shit.
Dustin, do you even know how science works?
Look, I'm not a fucking doctor. I'm also not picking apart a Tarantino movie for the least pickable parts.
I'm sorry, I just talk about what interests me, and I really liked that part.
No, that's fair. Oh, you did. I like that you mentioned her carrying the sword on the plane.
Yeah, when we were watching it, obviously, when was this movie filmed?
This was 2002, I think this came out.
So,
it was released post 9/11. I don't know if it was shot during or pre, though.
Well, yeah, because when I was watching it, living in a post-9/11 world, as we do, she had the sword, a sword that could kill any person, even God.
Oh, yeah.
And she was on the plane, and I realized she had the sword on the plane. I was like, how did she get through security?
Maybe it's... Well, she did leave from Texas.
That's true.
So, they're probably much more lax.
I mean, I've seen women with, like, giant knitting needles on planes.
Oh, there you go. You
can
kill somebody with that.
Yeah.
Oh, 2003. I was off a year.
Maybe.
So, yeah, this was probably definitely shot post-9/11 then. But, yeah, so, like, there's that. It's also an international flight. And also, that's the other thing, too, is, like, Tarantino films, every single one of them, for the most part, has at least one aspect that is... That, like, slightly stretches being grounded in reality.
Just one?
I said has at least one.
Okay, I was gonna say there were...
Because some of them are definitely a little bit more believable.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, I mean, you know, like, I see that and I'm just like, it's a Tarantino movie. I just let it slide.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not personally based in reality all the time, so...
Well, also, like, you mentioned the line about her killing God. Sonny Chiba, who plays Hattori Hanzo, has that great line, if you encounter God on your journey, God himself will be cut.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a great fucking line. And he's just great in this movie. Like, he's in it for 10 minutes, but it's really cool that Sonny Chiba gets thrown in the mix, especially because Tarantino's, the first movie he wrote, True Romance, opens with Christian Slater just, like, trying to convince this girl to go watch a bunch of Sonny Chiba movies with him. So it's nice to see that kind of come full circle.
Yeah, I really did like that whole scene with Sonny Chiba.
Yeah.
Where he and the guy that works there are arguing about who gets the sake and who prepares the sushi. I thought that was pretty funny. And then, I don't know where, I just got lost mentally because I'm not always grounded in reality. Am I Tarantino?
I don't think Tarantino is either.
I don't either.
Peas in a pod, you guys. Feel free to jump in with anything if you want.
aren't you a movie critic? In real life, friend.
Which means that my opinions are more valid than yours.
I just feel like you would probably have
these
more
are
to
professional
say
opinions.
On the subject.
Well, it's very interesting to me. Moments like a carry-on sword that just kind of your brain comes to a screeching halt at that point, and then you're like, wait, this isn't real. And those are the moments that, like, then, you know,
What do you think I should have been paying attention to besides eating popcorn and some guacamole?
Well, there's what she did with that sword for the... What did you think of the scene before the only other scene you had seen before?
Oh, I thought it was really empowering as a woman that she just fought off all those people. And I really liked the henchmen or the bodyguard.
The crazy idiots.
Yeah, well, the younger girl.
Oh, Go-Go, you're great. Yeah, she's great too.
Yeah, Go-Go was pretty funny because I thought like it was a stereotypical
like schoolgirl thing.
Yeah, but then Tarantino made her all empowered.
Yeah, and also psychotic.
Isn't that what empowered means?
And disemboweling. I think that's exactly like what female empowerment means. It involves the disemboweling.
That's how I feel empowered.
You can't be a sexually liberated woman unless you just spill an intestine.
Right. I mean, I did think it was kind of weird, but kind of funny how all the blood just squirted everywhere.
Yeah,
every time.
The exaggerated geysers of it. Yeah.
Oh man, that reminded me of the scene where. I felt really empowered where Lucy Liu's character takes over the boss's...
Mm-hmm. She decapitates boss Tanaka.
Yeah, Tanaka questions her authority, and then I liked how to, like, insult them because they had insulted her heritage. She was like, I'm gonna say this in English, you motherfuckers.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just decapitates.
Oh, yeah. That's a great scene in a movie just full of great scenes.
Yeah. Where we go from here, kids?
Well, I mean, there is literally the entire rest of the movie that we haven't hit on, too. I guess let's just go through the movie scene by scene, I guess.
Okay.
So obviously there's the intro with David Carradine as Bill off camera giving that monologue about being a sadist and everything before he kills Uma Thurman. Then we've got that great fucking, like, first real scene with her and Vivica A. Fox.
Oh, man, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was really good, how they, like, hid their swords for Vivica's daughter, what's her name in the
movie? Vernita Green is the character.
Vernita, okay. Like, how they hid, like, the, knives behind their backs, like the daughter wasn't gonna guess that there were other things wrong with her mom and Uma Thurman being covered in blood.
Children are stupid. That's another takeaway.
I think that's the real message of this movie. Children are stupid.
Oh, my dog knocked all this stuff over and threw commemorative plates. No, that sounds right.
I'm pretty upset. They never even showed the dog. Like, was it a Chihuahua? Was it a Great Dane? Was he really capable of all the damage that Vernita said?
It was the same Bernard.
It was
Beethoven.
It was Beethoven.
But what did you think of the end of, hey, kid, real sorry I killed your mom.
I'm gonna go.
You feel the need to plot my death for the next 20 years, that's cool.
I feel like she could have been more hospitable and at least given the kid a bowl of cereal.
Her mom spilled all the cereal. Right. The cereal was no good.
There was
probably trace gunpowder in the cereal after she tried to shoot her.
That would have helped with wanting revenge. Like, here's some cereal and some gunpowder. Now get fueled for revenge so Tarantino can make another film in 20 years.
Yeah, let me give you a bowl of this niche cereal that only Quentin Tarantino knows about and places in all of his movies.
It's in all the movies?
He always has some weird, or like he tries to, because like I know in Pulp Fiction there's like Fruit Brute, which is like a discontinued cereal that hasn't existed in decades.
Yeah.
So like he tries to throw like weird like shit in there, because he really is like a pop culture junkie, so he tries to throw that in, and then when it's not being obvious, like when people are talking about the movies he loves, it's all like, oh, here's this thing that doesn't exist from 40 years ago that Tarantino has just like a mat on for. I like that exchange between Nikki, the daughter, and Uma Thurman right before she leaves. Because, it's still, like, it's just cold. Like, she's all business throughout this entire movie. Like, and she's like, look, I'm not gonna kill you in front of your daughter, but I'm still gonna fucking kill you.
Right.
Oh, I killed you in front of your daughter. Hey, kid, sorry you had to see it, but I'm not sorry I killed your fucking daughter.
I like how she was no apologies, because, like, I guess the thing that I really did pay attention to was that it wasn't, like, the typical badass woman that you get in a lot of movies. where they make them hypersexualized. And, like, there was, I think one character did have nail polish, but she was still, like, or in the anime scene, I noticed that the anime character had nail polish on.
Yeah.
And she was a little bit sexualized, but, like, all the actual characters...
Was that Oren Ishii's character?
Yeah.
Well, she was supposed to be. She was infiltrating Boss Matsumoto to fuck him.
No, that was when she was on the
top of the
building.
Oh, when she was on the rooftop, like, with the rifle?
Yeah, she had a skin-tight red suit and then red nail polish.
Yeah, you could wear nail polish and still
but
kill
yeah,
people.
Which I caught myself back, and I was like, it's okay if she's an empowered lady and killing people. But, yeah, the rest of the female characters, and there were, I was happy that there were a lot of them, they didn't really seem hyper-sexualized.
Like,
Lara Croft from Tomb Raider, like, you just notice that, like, her boobs are
they're
substantially
like, how much
bigger.
Tighter, can we get this tank top in a child's large?
Yeah, like, all of the characters in this movie, like, their clothes fit and everything, but weren't too ridiculous.
Well, and even in that final scene, you get Lucy Liu in a very formless kimono.
So I really did appreciate that aspect of the film.
Yeah, and Tarantino is really good about that too with his female protagonist. I feel like he always puts attractive women in his films.
Yeah,
but very rarely are they like they're more than just sex objects. Like sometimes there are a few characters that are just that, but he's really good about also having them serve like a legitimate purpose in the movie too.
Yeah,
I think it's because the thing that's fueling it, the thing that's really fueling her revenge is her motherhood and her lost motherhood.
That maternal instinct.
That is a good point too. I didn't really think about
you know, to a point where she had sympathy for the situation of not killing someone in front of their daughter.
Yeah.
But is, as she said, that's not going to make me not kill you.
Right. Yeah.
And there's stuff too, like especially after we watch the second one, a lot more of it'll make sense too, once like more of the story unfolds. But that's a great fucking scene. What are your thoughts on the pussy wagon?
Oh, I was, like, it made me hate Buck's character more.
Yeah.
But I feel like, obviously, that's what Tarantino wants, just to really hate him and think
that
he's
a real shitbag.
Yeah, a real piece of shit.
I wonder if it, does it actually work?
Like
is there something about, like, it looks like a, like, something that like a redneck Ronald McDonald would and yet somehow this apparently just makes panties drop when you pull up in it.
Right.
That interior was nice. It looked nice on the inside.
Like, I don't think, like, if we're talking about moments where Tarantino's not grounded in reality, I don't think on a nurse's salary he could really afford
that. I mean, he was amending his salary
maybe
as
he used it to buy the pussy wagon.
That's true, and I guess in a way it makes a beautiful but sad metaphor that he bought the pussy wagon, was selling pussy.
See, maybe society's a view on a living wage has forced him into a situation where he has no choice. No, he's still garbage. But
that is true. Maybe he lives with his mother.
Well, if you read my Buck fan fiction, it gets into his backstory.
Is it an erotic fan fiction?
What? I don't think fan fiction exists that isn't erotic.
I guess that's true.
Why write about characters that aren't yours unless you're going to make them fuck somebody?
That's true. I feel like this conversation really got derailed, and I'm sorry.
What, with the pussy wagon? No,
yeah.
No, if it went too far out the left field, I would have reined it in.
Okay.
No, sometimes it's nice to see where the conversation leads. Sometimes we take it in interesting directions.
Yeah.
Sometimes it turns into me trying to justify to Danny Stratton why I own Judge Dredd. These things happen.
Right. I wondered, though, like, she was also in the car for 13 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And in my little brain, I was like, she probably had to pee at some point.
Maybe she did.
She could have. That's true.
Because you only see her from the ankles down when she gets out.
That's true.
So she may have soiled herself.
She might have peed herself. But what was the next scene, if we're continuing this pussy wagon ride?
It goes from that, and then it goes to Okinawa, to Hattori Hanzo. That's the thing, too, there's obviously a bunch of scenes, but, like, in the big picture of it, you've got, like, that opening, Vernita Green, all the stuff at the hospital, including that little prelude with Elle Driver.
Yeah.
Which is a great fucking scene. I love that song that she's whistling, too. It's such a good piece.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about her.
She's great. No, well, don't worry. There's plenty of her in two, so you'll get your Elle Driver fixed then. But yeah, then it goes to the hospital, then it goes to Okinawa, and then it's House of Blue Leaves. And then the little wrap-up epilogue.
That's true. I just hit me. But, like, if you're going from, like, women's perspective, it is kind of symbolic that they're all reporting, all these women, all these strong women are still reporting back to Bill.
Yeah, to a man.
Yeah, to a man.
Mm-hmm.
And she's gonna kill that man.
She's gonna kill Bill.
Yeah, kill Bill. Is that explained in number two?
What do you think is going to happen in number two? Since you'll find out very soon. You don't have to wait a year.
Yay! Well, I've seen the
second to last scene.
No, I think I saw the first scene in that one where it's in black and white. Like, I saw the exchange, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah, with her and Bill.
Yeah, but that's all I've seen of that
one. Okay.
I'm assuming she's gonna kill him. But it could be turned on me, and she could be killed.
Bill kills.
Yeah. Bill could kill.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for you to see two and then kind of have it in the context of the entire thing. Because originally the plan was you wanted to release it as one, right?
Yeah,
but
well,
it was too goddamn long.
Apparently fairly early in the production, they realized they didn't want to... They didn't want to make this movie... one feature length. I don't think they ever had plans for like a 4-hour theatrical release.
Yeah.
But didn't really want to cut out a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, because like even to squeeze it down to like a 3-hour movie would be a disservice to it.
Yeah. Because
like there's definitely like, I think in Death Proof and Django, there's some extraneous stuff that can be trimmed. I don't know if there's anything in the Kill Bills that I personally think should be cut. Like, I think everything serves a purpose for the most part, and I really like everything that's in them.
I think, like, yeah, out of the Tarantino movies that I've seen, I think that I do like that he does everything purposefully, at least it seems. And
yeah.
There's not really, like, where some movies, things just go on and on.
Yeah.
This keeps moving and keeps the plot going, and there's not just a bunch of shit that you don't really need.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and Death Proof is at least relatively short, too, for all the jumping around it does. But yeah, but Bastards and Django, I think Django is the longest one that he's done now, but they're just south of 3 hours.
Oh, man.
And then, yeah, they're very long films. They're very good movies. I like them both.
Mm-hmm.
But they're definitely, they're movies that if stuff got trimmed from them, I probably wouldn't be terribly upset by it.
Yeah.
But then, like, even, like, just watching Pulp Fiction last week, rewatching it again, I completely forgot that movie's 2.5 hours. But that's because it's paced so well.
It is,
and
yeah.
Because everything really does serve a purpose. Everything leads into the next thing. Like, there's nothing that's just in there just because.
Yeah.
Well, and Lauren's only going to be on the edge of her seat for 4 days. But the other great thing about the two film is the point that one ends is such a... Like, I mean, basically...
Yeah.
So this was your first time seeing it, but
yeah.
You realize when she wakes up, she thinks her baby's gone.
Right.
With good reason. Because
yeah.
She was
a few moments ago, in her coma brain, she had a pretty big belly.
Right.
And the reveal at the end that the target of all of her revenge is actually still alive.
It did kind of leave a cliffhanger, and
dun,
I was,
dun,
it did
dun.
Make me excited
yeah.
for number two. I was ready to watch it, but I really had to pee, and you guys told me we couldn't watch it today.
Yeah, we just don't have time, but we'll get to it. Four days, small price. We had to wait, what, a year,
yep,
I think?
Yeah,
between them?
Year
yeah.
Apart.
How did you sleep at night?
Didn't. Literally, just for a year, I did not sleep. Like, I'd start to nod off, and then my brother would just go, bam, bam!
But the baby!
I'd start seeing sirens just be,
I actually had doctors induce a coma, but I made them sign a please.
Did you go?
Please don't let orderly sell my body for muscles.
I towards the end, I really did like how because like I kept wanting to know why she kept the one member of the 88 alive, and then I liked how they explained that she wanted her just to tell Bill everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Sophie Fatale.
Yeah, Sophie. Because I was just like, why don't you just fucking kill Sophie already? But she had a purpose.
Yeah, yeah. Very deliberate.
And I was like, where is she dumping her? Just right at the hospital. She
yeah.
still wants her to get help.
Well, dude, like, not just dumps her at the hospital. Kicks her down a fucking hill
to
the hospital.
That's true.
Which is great. Like, if they had done that in Reservoir Dogs, they just throw Mr. Orange down a hill, that entire... that movie would have ended much better for everyone involved.
But yeah, it was like she was caring, but not just... Not too caring.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that.
Cool. Is there anything else either you want to hit on before we lead into the last part to wrap it up?
No, just that I did it probably enjoy it more than I'm putting on. It's just, this is how my voice is. And I can't really vocalize enjoyment.
Yeah.
So.
My whole MO is just sounding unenthused about everything.
pretty much. Just like Uma Thurman.
But were you okay with the violence?
I was.
Pervasive.
If you
yeah.
had heard how much I enjoyed Evil Dead 2.
Oh, yeah. She loved Evil Dead 2.
Yeah, I guess that's the other type of movies that I really like. Just cult, awful horror movies. Like, I got to see Killer Clowns from Outer Space the other weekend. I almost died from how much I loved it.
Oh, man. I'll have to have you watch Dead Alive sometime.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, you'll love that one. Cool, I think we're going to wrap up then with our favorite moments, our favorite scenes. So Lauren, we'll start with you and work our way around.
I might need to think on this for a minute.
Okay. Well, Brad, I assume you've got one.
I remember I saw this with my then girlfriend who, you talk about it as a female empowerment movie. She was, you know, coming out like karate chopping me
yeah.
and things. But the pinnacle of the whole thing is the first one has to be particularly the black and white sequence of the Crazy Eight.
Yeah,
movie,
which
played really well stylistically, but was also completely done because they were going to get an NC-17 for violence.
Oh,
so they just sort of flipped the switch and played this. You can watch just this maybe red liquid spurting
yep.
out of
Wait,
these necks.
So it doesn't count if it's black and white.
It plays better.
Yeah.
Typically.
Oh.
I mean, did you really even... It goes by really quickly. Did you know that she... Notice that she bisected a dude, like,
yeah.
down
yeah.
the middle
like
of his
head?
Like,
the most violent deaths, like,
yeah.
during that stretch.
Yeah, I did notice, but, like, I just thought it was more of, like, a stylistic choice
it
versus...
It cuts to it just as she yanks out that
the
first
eyeball.
Dude's eyeball.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's great, too, because, yeah, like, I'd never even thought about it that way.
That,
before.
I mean, almost, like, from an Evil Dead perspective, that's the part where the violence gets so... stylized and ridiculous.
And
it's where the stunt work that was a lot of Uma Thurman and a lot of Zoe Bell, is it?
The stunt woman
who regular stunt woman who was also starred in Death Proof.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that scene can't be topped. And it won't. And that's the only thing I'll give you. Don't expect that scene to be topped in part two.
Okay. I think maybe I did really like a lot of them. I think just the introduction to her fighting when she pulls up to Vernita's house
mm-hmm.
in the pussy wagon, and then just that scene where her and Vernita fight, and then there's cereal everywhere, and she tells the child, because I think it's very reflective of her being out on revenge for her child being
yeah.
taken.
But also still being kind of a mom.
Right, but still show her softer side, too.
Yeah. Cool. I think for me, anytime Sonny Chiba did anything was gold. He was great in the entire scene at the sushi place. And that voiceover he has at the end, too, about revenge being like a forest
yeah.
is so good. But that, obviously, my favorite thing is the entire House of Blue Leaf sequence. Because that's, like, from the second she cuts off Sophie Fatale's arm... to when she finishes fighting Oren Ishii, that's like a solid half hour of nonstop action. And I'm a total sucker for long action sequences in movies when they're done well. Like, Tarantino does it well. Guillermo del Toro is very good at it, too. So, yeah, just that entire sequence I fucking love. And then you get little moments of levity in it, too. Like, the kid that, like, she, like, very visually emasculates him by taking his sword apart and then whips
yeah.
him. And then, like,
I forgot about that. That was
like,
great.
This is why you don't fuck around with Yakuza, and sends him running home crying to his mother before she has that really cool wire fighting scene with Gordon Liu, who plays Johnny Moe, the crazy 88's leader.
Yeah.
So yeah, just that entire sequence is good.
Tarantino has a knack. He's so good at pacing that scenes that actually are long don't ever feel
like
it.
Yeah, and the tone of that action sequence changes like 6 times, too.
Yeah.
Like, it starts off like very like calm.
One great little inside joke that they give when Oren Ishii tells the bride, who we don't know her name in this, I'd love to get your guess as to what her name is. Do you read lips when the name is bleeped?
I'm not very good at reading.
We'll
lips.
Tell you after the second one. We'll tell you the clues that were there.
Is her name also Bill?
No.
That'd be a twist.
Yeah,
yeah,
that'd be a different level.
When Oren Ishii tells her that if you aren't rested, you won't last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
From the point that they start to fight to the point that Oren Ishii gets the top of her head chopped off is exactly 4 minutes and 59 seconds long.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Sneaky. Yep. Mm-hmm. He's a little foreshadowing of like, you're about to watch a 5 minute battle sequence.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's so good.
That's a good point. Oh, shut up. Sorry.
That's fine. The other thing I love too, like the last tonal shift, when that really cool score kicks up when they're fighting in like that snow garden, and then she gets cut and then like gets back to her feet, and then there's just no music
for
the entire rest of that scene. That's so fucking good.
I forget about
like,
that. I
get chills like when they stand up like and they're just like squaring off, like, and it's like a Sergio Leone movie, like the way like he paces like his Fistful of Dollars and stuff like that. Like it's so obvious like Tarantino's influences, but he also does them so fucking well.
Yeah, I forget I had noticed that, and I did really appreciate that they just cut out the music, because,
yeah,
like, you
great.
Usually have the music for
the
show.
Use of the music. This, like, the part one Kill Bill soundtrack, I think, is, like, if you could only have one, like, workout soundtrack that had to be a movie, it would be that.
Yeah, like, I think, like, as far as, like, pop soundtracks, Pulp Fiction's is best. As far as scores, this first Kill Bill, I think, is the best. And like the stuff that like the RZA contributed, and the Green Hornet score pops up once, right? Like, I'm not crazy, I wasn't imagining
that.
Yeah, I
think so.
Okay, because like I heard that before, and then I heard this, and I was like, pretty sure that's just the Green Hornet theme song.
Oh, and some of the cartoonish stuff. I don't, you know, the scene with when she knocks Go-Go down and she lands and she smashes a table.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did you hear there's a Foley artist bowling pin sound.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no.
That's like really kind
surreal.
Of like slapstick, cartoony, right in the middle of this. But he can. He shifts like...
And it works. Yeah, all kinds of great stuff.
So,
I'm excited to do part two with you.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm going to have to try to pick up all these little... More of these little things.
Yeah, it's great. And I'm sure we'll be there to point him out.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you, Brad Key, for guest hosting this episode. And thank you, Lauren, for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
And we'll catch you guys next time.
Join us next time as we wrap up Kill Bill Volume 2 with Lauren Benkaz and Brad Keefe, all leading up to this month's Struck a Nerve, the Pop Culture Mixtape, on Monday, September 15th at Wild Goose Creative at 8 p.m., the Quentin Tarantino edition. Make sure to like the page on Facebook, subscribe to How Have You Not Seen This on iTunes, leave us a review, it helps out. Send any questions or comments for the show to How Have You Not Seen This Podcast at gmail.com, and we'll catch you next time.